My guest at this time is Ed Gillespie, former chairman of the Republican National Committee. He is now the Republican nominee for the U.S. Senate in the state of Virginia. It's a race that has gotten considerably tighter in recent weeks, with some polls saying this is now a single-digit race. And Mr. Gillespie, thanks so much for your time today.
Thanks for having me on. Good to be with you.
For those of our listeners who aren't familiar with Virginia, you are challenging Mark Warner, the former governor. He is completing his first term in the U.S. Senate. Why should he be fired?
Well, he's not been the senator he said he would be. And in fact, he told us he would be an independent, bipartisan voice in the United States Senate. But in fact, he votes with President Obama 97% of the time. And he has voted against bipartisan amendment after bipartisan amendment, siding with Harry Reid and the Democrats in party line votes, and in support of policies that have been very harmful to Virginia. Here in the Commonwealth, since Mark Warner took office, you know, there are, for every net job created, two Virginians have gone on to food stamps. There are 65,000 more women living in poverty today. And as a result of his deciding vote for Obamacare, 250,000 of us will have our insurance plans canceled this year. And we can do better. You know, this is the result of bad policies, and my policies would turn things around.
Virginia, of course, was a traditionally conservative to Republican-leaning state, but over the past two election cycles and the last governor's race, they've voted for Democrats, whether it's President Obama, Senator Warner, now Governor McAuliffe. How do you tailor your campaign to the fact that the state appears to be trending more Democratic?
Well, it's certainly a purple state, and it's true that in the Electoral College, President Obama's two elections carrying Virginia here were the first time since 1964. But our Senate seats and our governorship has changed hands, you know, consistently, really, over the it's a pretty purple state. And that pendulum is swinging back, and I see more intensity and enthusiasm and energy amongst Republicans. And independent voters are very frustrated with the direction of the country right now, and so are a lot of soft Democrats. And I believe we're going to get a lot of soft Democrats, actually, who vote for me on November 4th, as well as a big turnout amongst Republicans and a majority of independents.
We're talking with Ed Gillespie, the Republican nominee for U.S. Senate in Virginia. And sir, you had another debate with Senator Warner on Monday. A lot of issues came up, which we'll get to a few of them. But one of them was the case of the now former state senator, Phil Puckett, a Democrat in a Republican-leaning area. He wanted to step down because he wanted his daughter to have a chance to get a better judicial position. There were stories that Republicans offered him a spot on the State Tobacco Commission, but Terry McAuliffe, the chief of staff, pretty much offered him anything. And then Senator Warner apparently was on the phone with Puckett's son, what Senator Warner calls brainstorming about different job opportunities for the daughter, including perhaps a spot on the as a district court judge at the federal level. This is obviously becoming a bigger and bigger issue in this campaign. What do you think this says about Senator Warner?
Well, I think Washington's changed, Senator Warner, and this is a deeply troubling report. And, you know, I would never play politics with a lifetime appointment to the federal bench. And that's what one of the papers, you know, actually many of the papers, but one said specifically, you know, dangling a federal judgeship to affect a political decision and help Governor McAuliffe get Obamacare expanded in the Commonwealth of Virginia. And the notion of, you know, in the context of this, you know, the state senator, whether or not he was going to leave his seat, step down or not, we have a 2020 state senate. For Mark Warner to get in the middle of that to talk about, well, maybe we can get your daughter a job with a federal contractor or maybe an appointment to the federal bench, very deeply troubling. You know, we know the impact that federal judges have in our lives and in our system, and I don't know the senator's daughter. I'm sure she's a, you know, a fine person, but I've never seen anyone say, oh yeah, and she's qualified to for a lifetime appointment to the federal bench. So what I think it shows is it raises concerns. Senator Warner, you know, stands by his actions. He hasn't said he regrets them at all. At least the governor's chief of staff apologized to the people of Virginia for his actions here. But there are a lot more questions that remain to be answered, and Virginians deserve an answer to these questions before November 4th from Mark Warner.
One of the other things you've done in your campaign, Mr. Gillespie, is something that is far more specific than a lot of other candidates around the country in terms of what you would do to replace Obamacare. You say you would like to repeal it, but you have specific steps for replacing it, including being able to shop across state lines and more market-based approaches. Talk a little bit about why you got specific when a lot of folks probably told you not to, and what power you'll have as a single senator if you're elected to affect that.
Well, I believe Virginians, you know, deserve a choice, and I have said from the beginning, I'm going to run on these five things. These are the things I will do as our next senator. If I don't do them, hold me accountable. In the same way, I'm saying Mark Warner should be held accountable for not doing the things he said he would do. And, you know, we all have concerns about Obamacare. I think it was a huge mistake. I said so at the time. I said it would kill jobs, raise our health care costs, and hurt our quality of care. And I was right about all those things. But, you know, I want to replace it with patient-centered, market-oriented reforms that will work, and that includes, in addition to employers getting a tax deduction for providing health insurance to their employees, I believe employees should have a benefit and a tax incentive directly, and a refundable tax credit, I think, is the right approach there. Make healthcare more affordable, easier for people to get. I also believe there should be protections for pre-existing conditions when you enter the marketplace, and I have those as part of this plan. As you said, insurance reforms, eliminating these artificial barriers to competing across state lines that you don't have in the auto insurance sector or the life insurance sector. We shouldn't have them in the health insurance sector. And a lot of reforms that I think would make healthcare more affordable and accessible to people, but wouldn't have this impact of having skyrocketing out-of-pocket costs and higher deductibles and premiums wouldn't result in 2.5 million fewer workers in our economy over the next decade because of the disincentives to work in the law, which is what the CBO estimates will be the impact, and wouldn't mean losing our insurance that we like and the doctors that we trust.
Mr. Gillespie, just a couple minutes left in our conversation here. You've said a number of times that positions you defended, whether it's in the Bush administration, as a member of his team, as communications director or another role, or as chairman of the party, you were defending the platform, and now you're expressing your personal views on different issues. So in some cases, there may be differences. So just on a couple of issues before we let you go, just want to get your positions. First of all, obviously, we're dealing with big deficits and a big debt. Where would you begin to cut spending?
Well, there's a number of ways to address our deficits, and one of the reasons we have deficits is partly because of the anemic economic growth we've been dealing with. And if we were to have economic growth rates consistent with the historic norm, and I've put forward an economic growth plan, a five-point plan to create jobs, raise take-home pay, lift people out of poverty, you know, that would, if we had a 4% economic growth rate, that would result in the deficit being reduced by a third because we'd have more revenue coming in from more taxpayers, fewer benefits going out to people who are out of work. And so that's an important element of deficit reduction. I do believe that we need to save our entitlement programs for future generations. You know, that has nothing to do with people in retirement or near retirement right now. But if you're 47 years old or younger, you know, you're looking at probably getting, the estimate is 77 cents on the dollar in Social Security for what's projected. And so we need to save this program for future generations. And in so doing, you know, that would have an impact on the budget as well. And then I believe, you know, every federal program needs to be subject to scrutiny. And we need to eliminate some, phase some out, pare some back, and then of course there's also a lot of wasteful spending that needs to be cut. An Inspector General report found that there was $6 billion in unaccounted for wasteful spending that nobody can even tell you where it went at the State Department alone last year. So there's a lot of things we can do to get to a balanced budget, and it's a mix of economic growth, which would result in more revenue, as well as spending reductions and entitlement reforms and other things.
Two very quick ones, both of which are kind of battles within the party right now. First of all, on immigration reform, you have some that say we've got to reform the system. We've got to create a pathway to citizenship. We've got to figure out a way to make sure that we don't just leave a broken system broken. Others saying, look, until we close the border or at least enforce border security in a meaningful way, the rest of this is just an invitation for folks to keep coming across the border illegally. Where do you come down?
I believe we must secure our border. We have not only a right as a nation to do that, we have a responsibility to do that. And the federal government You know, one of the things that's a problem with the Obama-Warner policies is the federal government's doing too many things better left to state and local governments and the private sector, and failing at too many things the federal government ought to be doing well. And securing our border is one of those things. And, you know, when there was an amendment on the Senate floor to build a fence along our southern border, 21 Democrats voted for it. This was in 2009, including former Democratic Senator Jim Webb of Virginia, but Mark Warner voted against it. I would have voted for that. And the things we do to secure our border and keep people from coming into the country illegally will let us welcome people who are coming here legally. And like my father, I'm the son of an immigrant myself. And, you know, that is a rational approach. I do believe we need, in addition to that, and following that, visa reform. 40% of those who are here illegally are here by virtue of having overstayed a visa. You know, if that were a private sector problem, it would be fixed by now. If you know, American Express sent out their bills every month and 40% didn't send back a check, they would find them and fix that. And we need to fix that here. I do not believe that people who are here by virtue of breaking our laws should be granted citizenship. I don't think that's fair to the people who came here and played by the rules and have waited patiently in line. I do think if we have secured our border and we have reformed our immigration system, we could issue fresh visas to people who are here illegally if they you know, pass a criminal background check, pay any back taxes, and demonstrate self-sufficiency, which has always been a hallmark of our immigration system here in America.
Last question. I know I've kept you a little bit longer than promised here. Right now, a lot of social conservatives are wondering if they're still a welcome part of the party. They're concerned that Republican leaders haven't spoken up much on critical issues, particularly as the polls have shifted on issues like marriage. Virginia was just at the center of a Supreme Court decision on the case. They let the appeals court decision stand. So same-sex marriage is now legal in your state. What do you say to social conservatives heading into election day?
Well, like many social conservatives, I love and respect people for who they are. I believe we're all created in the image and likeness of God, and I believe marriage is between one man and one woman. I also believe that I believe in a federalist, you know, system here, and I believe that the states have the proper purview for that, for those decisions. But my view is, you know, has not changed. I believe marriage is between one man and one woman, and but I do not support a federal, you know, marriage amendment to the Constitution.
Mr. Gillespie, we'll let you get back onto the trail, sir. I know it's going to be a busy sprint here over the next 2.5 weeks. Thanks very much for your time.
Thank you. Great to be with you. Appreciate you making time.
Thank you, sir. Ed Gillespie, former Republican National Committee Chairman. He's now the Republican nominee for U.S. Senate in the state of Virginia. I'm Greg Corumbus, reporting for Radio America.